Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. Well, often people ask me, how do you come up with an idea for Backyard and Beyond, you know, 5 days a week? And sometimes it's a challenge and most of the time it's really fun, but you just never know. So last evening when I am filling my watering can, I'm going, I have several, but they're different shapes. The tops of them have different size openings. The handles are a bit different. I'm wondering if there's any information out there on watering cans. Well, of course there is. And I just sort of get fascinated in finding out some of this information and looking back. And of course, watering plants has been around forever. But initially, there were not watering cans. There were watering pots. And they were very heavy, probably not designed for easy use. Usually the handle was kind of at the top to the side. And they were made out of terracotta. So they were heavy before you put the water in. And then to use them, of course, was a lot of work. So then, and really not so very long ago, in fact, in 1886, I mean, in terms of time, that's not a very long time ago. John Hawes of Clapton, London, obtained a patent for an improved watering pot. Now, I have to say, before this time, there had been some design changes and made out of some different kinds of metals. They hadn't, until 1886, they hadn't been made out of terracotta all of that time. But here came along this Englishman who wanted to improve the watering pot, and now called the watering can. And his patent read, "This new invention forms a watering pot that is much easier to carry and tip, and at the same time being much cleaner and more adapted for use than any other put before the public." Now, envision, if you will, this watering can with the spout attached at the very bottom of the container, not halfway up, not at the top as some of them are, but at the very bottom. So that formed a pretty severe angle. So to keep the spout from falling off, breaking off, there was also a brace added from about, you know, maybe the middle of the spout back to the can. And what did this do? Well, because that spout is attached at the very bottom rather than in the middle, it makes sure that you can get all the water out of the pot, the can. And it also increases the ease of use for pouring because you've got a little weight there that helps that happen. So, of course, he didn't just, from there, after he got his patent, he didn't stop with that. And by the way, Hawes watering cans are still made today. And after all I read, I think I want one. John Hawes first worked out his improved design and method of manufacture from a French-made water pot and designed it with perfect balance. So whether it was full, half full, or empty, the can could be used with undue strain to the operator. And to this day, that original design has not been altered in any major way. Now, think about timing, 1886. London in particular was expanding rapidly, and nearby fertile Lee Valley was becoming a center for large glass houses, nurseries, in which watering was a vital activity. You didn't do it with a hose. It all had to be done by hand. This development also coincided with a boom in professional, labor-intensive gardening on the landed estates throughout Great Britain. And anybody who has any interest in gardens will probably know that if you want to see some of the most beautiful, well-tended, intricately planned gardens, England is one of the places that you visit. So, as we said, he took out this patent. Now, did he just automatically become famous and everybody wanted one of those? Well, not at first. But then there were some top gardeners, the word got around, and he eventually got a National Chrysanthemum Society Award for his improved watering can. So there we go. That was his success right there. So some of the kinds of things that that he thought about and that waterers think about is the design of the rose. Well, that's the end of the spout where the water comes out. And the design, of course, affects how much water comes out, how fast it comes out, what the pattern is, lots of different things. So that rose at the end is really important. And thinking about what kinds of things we're going to be watered, whether those are newly sown seeds that are very delicate, or whether this is a plant or a situation where the plants are, they just need watering, but they're already well established. So even though the basic design has not changed, Hawes has made some additions, brought it up to date, and in addition to metal, has added some other alternatives. If you're like me at all, I have a couple of plastic ones. And even then, you have a choice of those that are very lightweight or those that are a little heavier weight, and that's going to affect how long the container will be able to be used. So what do you think about it? I thought it was interesting. Of course, I went to the website for the Hawes, H-A-W-S, watering can. And there's tips. How do you use the watering can? What should you consider when you're buying a watering can? Which I thought was kind of interesting. And of course, as you look at it, if there's one or two on the shelf, you go, well, that's the one I'm going to get. But if you're serious about it, and especially if you're going to put a bit more money into one that's going to last a long time, not just one of those lightweight plastic ones, then you want to think about what's the capacity, because when you add the water, of course, it's going to be heavy. So do you want a half gallon? Do you want just a quart? Do you want a gallon or maybe a bigger one? And one of his tips is a reminder that, you're more balanced if you have two, one in each hand. So, of course, you need two of them. Take a look at the length of the spout. How far do you need to reach if this, especially, well, indoors or out? How far do you need to have the water reach? So how long do you want the spout to be? The size of the spray. And that's where you're going to take a look at that rose to see how big the holes are, how many holes there are. And I would recommend that you take a look at how it's attached. If it's an inexpensive one, they're just screwed on, those break pretty easily. And even in metal, you were going to have a few choices. Originally, when they first were made of metal, they were made of copper. Well, you're probably not going to find many of those unless they are the antique ones and likely to be very expensive. Many are made of galvanized metal, and those are great for water. If you were going to put any chemicals in the water, that might affect the galvanized finish. And, of course, there are other metals, too, and again, affecting the weight. So, as you go shopping for a watering can, you might think back to Mr. Hawes and how he improved our situation by developing this perfectly balanced water can. And take a look at what you have, whether that's indoor, where you just want a little one, or whether it's outdoors, where you have more area to cover. And all of these things that they mentioned, what it's made out of, the capacity, the length of the spout. And I would also say, look at where the spout is attached to the body of the can, because that will make some difference in how the water comes out of there. And also the size of the spray. So who would have believed? Well, some serious gardeners who do lots of watering by hand, I'm sure, have a favorite watering can. But if you're not one of those, it probably never even entered your mind that there are lots of options and that it might make a difference if you're going to water your house plant or water your plant outside. Might be important or be helpful to take a look at how that watering can is designed. So until next time, here's something my dad used to say. Think about how sometimes we get upset with the rain when we have too much rain. Of course, we get upset when we don't have enough. But he says, if there's too much, something will still grow. If there's no moisture, nothing will grow.